It's time for our weekly chat with National Party MP Christopher Luxon.
Earlier today, I spoke to National MP Christopher Luxon as part of our weekly interview. We discussed the latest COVID-19 case, and I asked him his thoughts on some of what Professor Baker had told me. We also spoke about his first oral question in Parliament and his mini debate with Transport Minister Michael Wood. In that part, we also touched on the controversial deal Air New Zealand had with Saudi Arabia's Navy while Luxon was CEO of Air New Zealand. I started by asking Luxon whether he thought introducing testing for New Zealanders and Australians crossing the bubble would help protect us against COVID.
Well, I actually think what would be interesting is we've been advocating for something called saliva testing since back in August, and it's almost as accurate as the much more invasive sort of nasal swab model, but it gives you very much an indicator immediately as to whether you have COVID, don't have COVID. In fact, I was looking at something in the Gulf States just yesterday, and I could see that in Qatar, you know, you come off a plane, you're given a saliva test, you go into the no, you're good pile, or no, you've actually got COVID pile, we've got a different model to handle that. And I just think there's a tool set like saliva testing that could be very useful for us. I think what it highlights more so than anything, the whole issue of the COVID experience and outbreak in Wellington, is that we are, as I said to you last week, quite exposed because COVID, with its different variants, and I see there's variants pluses today roaming around the world, are actually highly contagious and it's still raging around the world. We're relying on MIQ and our border to keep us safe, but we now have, you know, the lowest rate of vaccination in the OECD. We're 120th of 195 countries in the world. And we're not, you know, that vaccination is, and getting the country vaccinated is the single biggest thing we should be focused on all year long, because it is when you get back, strip away everything else that we'd like to do, that's the must-do that we really have to do in order to secure the health comes for our people. But importantly, once we have that in place, it gives us a level of protection that enables us to open up to the world a bit more.
I spoke to Michael Baker earlier about New Zealand's vaccine rollout in the latest case. I sort of mentioned that to him. I said, should New Zealand be doing better with vaccines? And he said he thought allowing other countries who fared worse from the virus was the ethical thing for New Zealand to do because it was about saving lives. In America, hundreds of thousands of people had COVID, so it's a bit more immediate, whereas New Zealand, we haven't actually had a huge amount of cases. Do you think this is a valid argument that it is ethical to allow countries more in need to get access to the vaccine first?
Look, I can hear what he's saying, and I've heard that argument used. To be honest, I felt that was used early on as an excuse for why we hadn't secured orders and vaccines. I've got a situation in America where there is excess vaccines that they are now giving away in large quantities around the world because they've got through the large bulk of their population testing. The same thing's happening in Britain. So I get that logic, but the bottom line is we were promised to be at the front of the queue. You act in the national interests of your people. All we need is one breach, as we're seeing in New South Wales, but imagine that times 100, and all of a sudden we're back at scratch again and everyone's not saying those remarks at that point in time. So I hear it, but I don't think that's a, I think it's not as binary a choice as that we consciously chose not to place orders so that we could deliberately be last so that others could take the spot ahead of us. I think that's too simplistic and it doesn't hold up.
The current alert system and restrictions around masks and signing in to new places, is that sufficient? Professor Baker suggested compulsory masks and compulsory sign-ins could be useful at higher alert levels. Do you think this could help protect New Zealanders?
I think he's got a very good point, and I would take my advice from a scientist because we should be science-led through all of this process. But I think his point about masking is a good one. I also would say to you that if you get out and actually look at some of the trackers that are used in other countries, and I was just looking at the one just last week from New South Wales, and you sort of do wonder why we don't just steal that one, because in New South Wales, if you're in Sydney, you can't go inside a shop unless you've got a green tick on your app. And so there's a lot more that we could be using and leveraging that technology, but our technology tool hasn't fundamentally changed the COVID tracker as such, right? It's pretty basic. It doesn't do a lot of complicated stuff, and yet others have equivalent COVID trackers that we should be understanding how they work and whether we can just steal them and reapply them for the New Zealand context.
Do you think compulsory masks could be a good idea at higher alert levels?
I'm not against it per se. I think that's really a call for the Ministry of Health and infinitely more qualified people who really understand how this virus transmits and what would be the best case, best action for us to do that.
I'd like to move on to something quite different. You made some headlines this week after your exchange with Michael Wood in Parliament. He described your understanding of transport policy as immature. What was he saying was immature?
Gee, no, I think you must be sort of one of the 1% of 1% of people in this country who watch parliamentary TV. Look, no, as an opposition, essentially, just if I zoom out to help explain the process a bit, you've only got a few ways to actually do what we officially charged to do under our constitution, essentially, which is to hold the government to account. And you do that through what are called written parliamentary questions or official OIAs, and where you might have a series of questioning and you send that off to the minister and their department to answer those questions for you. You have a chance when a minister appears twice a year before a select committee, which is a group of multi-party politicians who might have responsibility for transport and infrastructure, is the committee that I sit on. And so you might get two opportunities to ask one or two questions in the hour that the minister's before you, but so does everyone from other parties. And the third exchange is really around oral questions in the Parliament, which happen Tuesday, Wednesdays and Thursdays. And the number of questions your party gets is directly attributable to the size of your party relative to the size of the Parliament. So typically the National Party will get four questions a day, and one is typically for the leader, and one might be typically for the finance person, and there's two other topics for the day. So I had one of those questions earlier in the week, and it was really interesting, actually, because it was my first time as a new politician actually having the opportunity to get an oral question. It's quite a good thing. So it was great. But really what I was going with Minister Wood around was, again, this cycle pathway, the $785 million being spent, and essentially, is it really helping people get around their daily lives? Isn't it just an ideological project when there's no business case that stacks up to it and hasn't been prepared? And then sort of, isn't there just much better things we could do with the money? What is interesting to me on that project, though, is that this morning I've woken up and, all of a sudden, the Eastern Busway, which is a service from Panmure through Pakuranga to Botany, 7.5 kilometres long. It was first conceived of as an idea back in 2006. Supposed to be finished, completely finished in 2025. Stage 1 of 5 has almost been finished. That has now been pushed out to another 2 years because they have withdrawn some of the budget from that because they can't afford that. And as a result, the delivery of that timing will now move out to 2027. And to be honest, whether it sticks in 27 or it's another 3 year delay after that, it's quite something. It gets back to my point, which is that, well, you've got $785 million. Why wouldn't you? It's a nice to do. I would love to ride that cycle way and walk that track. I really would. But at a time when New Zealand has got its economy shrinking and we've got a whole bunch of debt building, why? And we've got other priorities. Why wouldn't you actually take that money and try and make sure that something that will impact hundreds of thousands of people a day, like the Eastern Busway, actually is maintained and delivered on time and in full?
You mentioned Michael Wood and calling names. He also made a bit of a dig about arm deals with Saudi Arabia, referencing how Air New Zealand had a contract with the Saudi Navy while you were CEO of Air New Zealand. Do you feel like it's a bit of baggage that's going to be carried around with you? Does it bother you?
No. You've got to understand, I'm answering my first question. He's a minister of the government. He's taking a question from me, and it's as much... in his psychology that he decides that that's an appropriate thing to say when there was nothing proven or nothing wrong with that. But he's just doing that because he's trying to unsettle me. And that's what that's about in the debating model. I personally, that's not the way my politics kind of roll. I can disagree without being disagreeable with people. I think you can have a good debate about an issue without making it personal and calling names of the other side of the other person per se. We've got to stay focused on what we're doing in order to get outcomes that matter most in New Zealanders' daily lives. And frankly, to hear all that sort of stuff from politicians in Parliament, it just turns so many people off, I can tell you. And I'm only new to it. It used to turn me off. And so I don't know why they do it. That's a question you have to push back to him. But part of it might be buying time to think about his response. There could be a whole bunch of debating reasons for why they do that. But for me, I just wanted to ask some four pretty straight questions.
And just quickly on the whole Saudi and New Zealand thing, because we hadn't sort of set up our weekly interview at the time when the whole scandal happened. Just quickly, do you regret how that played out? Would you have done things differently?
No, I've answered all of that, and there was nothing there. And so I appreciate you might want to try and drag it up and bring it up and make it into something that it's not, but it's definitely been resolved. And so, no, there wasn't, as I said at the time, knew nothing about it, and obviously left a couple of months after that arrangements had been made. And subsequently, you know, the New Zealand government's gone on to find a whole bunch of other challenges that it's had itself around arrangements with different countries around the world. So, no, look, I'm comfortable with that. The Air New Zealand, most importantly, was what I was all interested in, was do a review, find out what happened, what do we learn from it, how do we improve it so it doesn't happen again.
That was National Party MP Christopher Luxon. You're listening to The Wire on 95 BFM.